T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And you're listening to Upstate Outdoors. We're beginning the second hour of the show. We're always here, 106.3 WORD, except when traffic on 85 prevents it.
almost.
But we made it.
We made it.
And so the second hour, first hour is a lot of deer hunting, because it's deer season. That's what we're going to talk about.
Roger.
And we're actually got a guy we're going to talk about. He got a great bear hunting story about a bear that he killed last week. And then we're going to throw some slime into the mix and give you a fishing report fresh from the Angler's Channel.
Exactly.
And then by then, it'll be time for the counter of events and the parting shot, which will be an audible. Got another squirrel story. Them squirrels are
nuts.
Well, I mean, actually, see, yeah, they are. Did you see the video I posted
about
the squirrel?
Speaking
of nuts.
I seen it before you posted it.
About the squirrel that got his caught.
Wow.
In a gap in the fence.
Wow.
I've had days like that. I mean, figuratively.
I've had really, 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 really close run-ins with barbed wire.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine that.
Yeah, there you go. So you know it's a bad day when you're walking along a fence and all of a sudden you get pulled up by, by the short hairs and you go, But the guy did free him.
Sure did. Yeah. That was probably...
I bet that squirrel was like,
that's risky. I mean, you really made, if you wore some like gloves for welding, you'd be all right. But don't go up there with some regular old garden glove thinking he's not, man, he'll go right through it.
If you ever see a squirrel caught by his nads in a fence and try to free him
with some lawn and garden gloves, you might get hurt.
Yeah. Hey, real easy. All you got to do is go up there with a pair of scissors and clip. See ya, buddy. He'll be free.
And then he'll have a really high-pitched voice.
Hi. How you doing today? Anyway, weren't we supposed to do something this hour?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, how do you follow that, okay? I mean, really? Wow.
With some sauce?
Yeah, I guess so. And maybe some flour and hot grease. Yeah.
Squirrel nads, right?
Anyway, hey, man, congratulations to my blood brother. He's really worked hard this year. He's put in his time, put in a lot of effort, and it's paid off big double dividends in 24 hours. And Springer's hat's off to him. I feel like I'm a part of it, even though I'm not.
That's because I give you all my old deer meat.
But anyway, if I had killed 2 bucks in 24 hours, there would be fresh backstraps on the menu immediately. And, I have eaten them without never being cured or set in the ice for a day or so. I have done that. But it is best to let the deer age. Or if nothing else, if you don't have a walk-in cooler, have it in a cooler with ice, you know, but the ice is at the bottom of the cooler so the meat can drain. And if so, you need to do it like this. You need 1 pound deer backstrap or larger, 2 eggs beaten, 1 cup of milk, 2 tablespoons of honey, and 2 tablespoons of brown sugar, 2 cups of flour, and some oil for cooking. All you're going to do is cut the backstrap in about a quarter inch thick pieces. And then if you have a meat mallet, pound them a little bit, just a little bit, not much. Or you can use the bottom of a beer can. It works the same way. In a bowl, beat the eggs and milk, honey and brown sugar, and stir well, all right? At this time, you're going to place the flour in a shallow dish. At this time, also, you're going to be heating up the oil in a large, I like cast iron skillet myself, medium heat. Dip the chops in the egg-milk mixture with all the good stuff in it, and then roll it in the flour, add it to hot oil. And it's not going to take it long to get right, okay? As soon as the flour starts to get that good-looking golden brown, they're pretty much done. Flip them if you need to. And so don't overcook them. That's the main thing. And if you're able to hold off, they really are good served with fried potatoes or mashed potatoes or vegetables. But it's hard as I usually eat them about as fast as I bring them out of the grease. So there you go. Sweet fried backstrap, baby.
So question. You said fresh, never frozen. What if they're frozen, what does that...
It doesn't. It's no, there's, you know, I don't think it makes a difference. Maybe it's just a mindset thing, Philip.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know...
Well, it ain't been that long ago that you stopped ripping them out with your bare hands and eating them in the field.
Yeah, sort of like a Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
Okay, man, you know, it's like sacred thing. You know, hey, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Right after I led him with that left front Michelin rubber,
there you go.
Caught him with the bumper, baby.
Yeah, no, you don't want to hit him with the bumper. But you think about it.
It's like leading a dove.
Well, no, I mean, the bumper is designed to push stuff away.
Correct.
So if you go at him with the tire, the tire is designed to pull stuff in.
Correct. So it's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, so that first deer I hit with a truck, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually seen I seen one time,
yeah.
A dude hit a deer. And he kind of got it up in the wheel well like that. And it was a nice buck. Okay,
yep.
This is in Alabama. The daggum horns freaking punctured. And it freaking flattened the front tire. It broke it off right at the skull plate.
Oh.
Yeah, and the deer came out from under the truck and was dead. But it ripped the horn right out of his.
So he wasn't trophy hunting.
No.
Yeah.
It's a decent 8-point.
Well, we've been kicking this around, and I put it on the Facebook page, my feelings on it. I really don't have time because we got to get to the bear hunting story. But there was a story that basically hit the wires and went viral on Facebook about a family in South Carolina who have raised a deer from a fawn. And I won't give their name because I really don't want to come down on them because, I mean, look at it. If somebody came to you and said, hey, Springer, you know, we found this doe that got hit by a car.
Right.
And there's this little fawn with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What would I do?
What would you do?
What would I do? I would have to think about it. The first thing I'm not going to do is take it home and raise it as a pet.
Well,
I would start looking at the options. Maybe let's leave it there. I know it's going to perish.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I would take it to somewhere where they can have it rescued or something. But I'm not going
to
take it home for a pet.
You got to take it to an institute. Anyway.
It's illegal.
These folks raised it, and it doesn't say really in the story, but they were not allowed to put it in a pen, and so they raised it up to about 6 months, and then they just kind of let it hang out with them, and they were feeding it. Well, in the process, what happened is this deer learned not to be afraid of people. And they said, well, you know, every year, I mean, it's free to roam however it wants to. And so it's sort of half wild, half, but it will come up to people and it's not afraid of people. And they said this deer during the season roams around and it comes back to feed and all that. Well, now it's a 7-point deer. And the concern is that somebody's going to shoot the deer. So what they did was they wrapped it up. They put yellow around the antlers. And I saw on social media where a lot of folks said, why didn't they put a collar on it? Why didn't they put a tag on it and stuff? And I'm thinking DNR might have stepped in. It doesn't say. Nah. This deer's got to be wild. And they, you know, they were like, well, you know, let's spray paint the antlers or put yellow tape on it or whatever. But here's the problem. And we've talked about this before. About wild animals and going up to wild animals. So you got this deer, and I say this from experience, secondhand experience from a friend of mine who before it was legal and probably was illegal, but he raised a deer, okay? And he raised a buck. He found it during turkey season, and he had a pen. He put the deer in there, and they would go in every day and feed it, and it was a pet deer. Well, one day he was going to work, and he called one of the guys that works with him and said, hey, how about go down there and feed the deer for me? I'm running late. And the guy opens the cage just like he's done before. You know, everybody had been around the deer, and that joker nailed him. Why? It was during the month of November.
Bingo.
And that joker nailed him and tried to kill him.
Bingo.
Because basically, during this time of year, when a buck gets big enough, he's like a crackhead.
Correct.
On testosterone.
True.
Okay? And they're unpredictable because they're subject to hormones. And so I'm playing this scenario out where you got this, family-friendly deer, and all of a sudden one day it kicks in, hey, I'm a mature buck, and, you know, so I'm out in this field, and I'm looking around, and here comes some kid. Oh, there's George. Well, he's not afraid. this George is not afraid of humans.
True.
And this kid comes up like, oh, I want to pet the deer, you know, grab it by the tail, anything. And all of a sudden, George does to a kid what this deer did to my buddy's friend.
Who was full grown.
And he, yeah. And I mean, this guy, he told me the story about it. I actually went and visited him when he was in the hospital, because it put him in the hospital for 3 days.
Right.
It got him in the shin. Okay. And a lot of infection and stuff from being gored by the antler. But if that thing gets hold of a kid, I mean, bad things can happen. And I don't want to be one of those people that talk about what could happen. But this is a little more further along that line of what could happen, because that buck, I don't care how docile he is throughout the year, when that rut kicks in and that testosterone gets in, that's the same reason that these bucks are crossing the street. You know, in front of cars, they don't care.
No fear.
Yeah. I mean, they're under the influence of testosterone. That's why they'll fight in the middle of the intersection, and some kid comes around and something can happen. Now, here's what's going to happen, okay? So this happens, and I hope maybe somebody that knows the Thunderbirds or whatever, I said I wasn't going to, but the people who own this deer or started this deer, what's going to happen to the law? What are the lawyers going to do when this kid's injured?
They're coming to get you.
They're coming to get you because you created, you wound up this time bomb and you let it go.
Bingo.
If I was the people who raised that deer, as much as it pained me, I would put a bullet in his brain.
You heard it from the man himself.
That is exactly what I do. I mean, it's bad. Oh, you do that to a pet deer. I can't believe you. But look. It's the wild animals, okay? Wild animals need to be wild, and when wild animals are brought into captivity and lose fear of people, bad things are going to happen.
Bingo.
And the other thing about that, and the reason that DNR is really cracking down on deer in captivity, is the chronic wasting disease. Now, we referred to that last week a little bit, and we're probably going to get Charles Ruth on the show in the next couple of weeks to talk about chronic wasting disease.
Because I think there's going to be some major changes.
That has the potential of wiping out most of a state's deer herd if it gets it's a contagious disease. It's passed one deer to another.
True.
And we have not seen it in South Carolina, but they've got two cases of it in Mississippi. It's just two states away. And I'm afraid it's coming, and I don't want to see that
whatsoever. And how many trail camera pictures do you have of does licking each other on the face?
Oh, man.
Hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. That's how it spreads.
Well, let's go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to have a really cool interview with Jeff Kay about a bear hunting story and a nice 504-pound bear that he killed.
All right, that's right here, Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about how to prepare Smokey the Bear backstraps right here on Upstate Outdoors.
Welcome back. You're listening to Upstate Outdoors on 106.3 WORD, and we got a great guest on the line for you. We've got Jeff Kay of Traveler's Rest. And, man, we want to talk about a bear hunting story. Jeff, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Thank you for having me on.
You bet.
Well, now, Jeff, I was reading the write-up that my buddy Brian Cope, in the synopsis of the hunt is posted on the CarolinaSportsman.com website. And so opening day, October 17th, rolled around. You've been bear hunting for a while. But, man, you got a big surprise on opening day this year.
I got a huge surprise. I've actually been bear hunting for 9 years in the same area and never have been able to get my gun on one. And so I did some scouting this year and went up there, and I found plenty of signs. But the signs, you know, look like multiple bears of different sizes. So I come home and told my wife, I said, I've found plenty of signs, but looks like maybe a sow and some cubs. And so the opening morning, I went up and it had been raining, and so I was able to walk up and not make any sound, and I actually slept up on the sow and the cubs. And so that was a pretty exciting morning. She put them up the tree, and then she actually sort of come toward me a little bit. And so when she went and got the cubs back down from the trees, I sat down, and they actually fed around me for almost 2 hours eating acorns and everything. And even though the coves was big, I knew, you know, you can't take a sow with coves. And so, I mean, I was itching to pull a trigger on something, but I just sat there and watched them all morning. And so as I come down off the mountain, I happened to see a game warden stop down there. So his name's Dustin Sherbert, and I stopped and talked to him. I said, I know the law is you can't shoot a sow and some cubs, but what if the cubs are about grown? Because these was, one of them was actually almost a shooter itself.
Uh-huh.
He said, no, you can't take them. So you did the right thing, not letting them go. So I come on home. I don't live too far from where I hunt, and talked to my wife, and we talked about it. And she's my biggest supporter and my biggest fan. And she said, well, you know, you did the right thing, letting them walk and all. I said, well, what I'm worried about is all the signs I've seen, and it's from them. They may not be another bear up there. And so we prayed about it. We're Christians, and we prayed about it. And so decided to go back, and I went over on a different ridge and sit on a different ridge. And, man, I hadn't been sitting there long at all when here he come up the holler there.
Yeah, but, you know, be careful what you ask God for,
because yeah,
some, God's got a sense of humor sometimes, and you know,
and let me make
he'll give you more than you want.
Exactly. And Jay, let me make this clear that you're sitting on the ground.
I'm sitting on the ground.
Bingo. Okay, continue on.
So,
there you go.
Yeah.
He come up. He was about 100 yards away. And, of course, when I first spotted him, I wanted to make sure it wasn't the sow that I seen with the cubs, so I kept checking behind him, and he was coming on up the ridge, and he was in some thick stuff, so I couldn't get a shot. So I looked back one more time and did not see any cubs, and there was a little opening. I said, well, when he comes in that opening, if I don't see any cubs, I'm taking him. And so I shot. I knew I made a good shot. He turned. I could tell by the way he acted. But as he turned to run, I decided to go ahead and fire another shot, and I heard him crash in the woods. And at that time, I knew he was big, but I didn't know how big he was until I walked up on him. And, of course, I'm hunting by myself.
Ooh.
Don't have anybody else up there. I'm about a mile from the truck, and there he is. He's huge. I didn't know he weighed over 500 pounds at the time. He's my first bear. And so,
and at that time you knelt down and prayed and said, Lord, help me get this thing out of here, right?
Lord, send me somebody to help tote this bear now.
Exactly. He answered my prayer of bringing one to me. So now, and he answered my prayer. He didn't give me the strength to pull him out, but he answered my prayer of getting me some help up there. So the Dustin Sherbert, the DNR officer, he happened to be on the road when I come out, and me and him walked back in, and we couldn't budge this thing. We might have moved him 3 feet. And he said, Jeff, you're going to have to get some help. And, you know, and so I called a couple of people, and I called my good buddy Bubba Stanton. He lives in Travers Rest. He knows everybody. He was unable to come himself, but he said, you just hold on. Said, I got some help on the way. And a little bit later, I started getting phone calls, and it was I had 7 people calling, say they're on their way. I would like to say their name. It was Roger and John Medlin, Rick Covington, David Grumbles, John Hill, Charlie Gates, and Clayton Hudson. They all come up there, and we got it out. We had a long drag. A lot of the drag was down a hill, but we got it to the trail, and we had to go out a trail for a couple hundred yards, and then the DNR officer, Dustin, he backed his truck down. We was able to all load it on his truck, and then he drove it out, and we transferred it to my truck.
What a team effort.
Awesome. Yeah. So was this public land, or was this private land that you were hunting?
This is public land. It's game management land. So
you folks out there, you know, a lot of folks say, well, you know, I don't have such and such private land to hunt. And there's plenty of wild game to be found on public land.
They are, if you look and be patient. Like I said, it took me 9 years to get this guy, but he was well worth the wait. And but I hadn't seen bears before, and I'd actually, the first year I bear hunted, I had went up and scouted a little bit and found some signs, and I didn't see a bear, but I seen a really nice buck. Well, after bear season closed, I went back to hunt the buck, and fate would have it, I seen a really nice bear.
That sounds like me turkey hunting. Every time I go turkey hunting, I see deer. And when I go,
usually the way it goes.
Wow. Yeah. But so you saw a deer while you were bear hunting. Now the seasons are now concurrent, so that you can actually, I mean, if you got a bear tag in your pocket, it's an opportunity, whichever one shows.
Yeah, well, this was 9 years ago. So, and
oh,
I don't
okay, before they passed that, yep.
Yeah, it was before they passed that, so I was unable to do that.
All right, well, Jeff, I see in my mind a beautiful bear rug right in front of the fireplace in your living room, if you have a fireplace. Would that be appropriate?
I do have a fireplace, but I have decided to go with a three-quarter mount.
Oh, good.
Would have loved to went with a full body mount, but I couldn't afford it. But the taxidermist that usually does my work, he was unable to do the three-quarter mount that I'd want. So I actually took it to Chip Hamilton and Easley, and he's got it right now. And so hopefully I get it back. And
well,
it's going to be awesome.
Chip's a good friend of mine, and I'm sure Chip's going to do a first-class job for you. And, man, that's a great bear hunting story.
Absolutely.
And congratulations. And, hey, you need to send Springer a recipe for bear backstraps.
Yeah, that would be good. If you have a good recipe, Jeff, I want you to send it to our Facebook page and just send it as a message or whatever, and I will be more than glad to use it. Absolutely.
Okay. I've got plenty of bear meat, and I just want to say, while I'm on here, I do thank the Lord Jesus for blessing me with that. I'm a Christian. I've accepted Christ as my Savior, and I give him for all the credit for blessing me with that hunt that day.
Wow. Awesome.
And that's good stuff,
and,
man.
And not only sending me the bear, but sending me somebody to pull it out.
That's exactly right. He sent me plenty of hair. He didn't just send me a couple guys. He sent me seven guys, big, strong guys. So
all right,
it was awesome.
All right, Jeff. All right, man. Great story.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Jeff. Take care, buddy. Golly, sitting on the ground with bears, dude.
I tell you what, I'd have been more scared sitting on the ground. He's like, well, I was just watching that sow. When I saw the sow with cubs,
I'd already be nervous.
I'd have gone to the next reader. Hey,
okay,
my bad.
And especially as soon as she run them up the tree
and
come looking for me.
Yeah, yeah. My bad. I'm out. I'll go somewhere else. You got this place. Let's go to our break, and then when we come back, we're going to give you a fishing report.
Right here, Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry. Stay here, we're going to go fishing. Yeah, right now.
Hey, we got a couple of minutes before we jump into the fishing report. What we got on the text line, Springer? We got several of them that are backing up there.
Yeah, one texter says the fishing report it's rattle trap time. Okay, we'll take your word for it. And then one guy had a run in with a barbed wire fence like I did when he was about 14, and he put some of that purple stuff his dad does.
Read the text.
Okay, believe it or not, fellas, I done that myself. Talking about the barbed wire on the tender area.
Uh-huh.
And it was a terrible feeling. I was about 14 years old. I put some purple stuff on it that Dad used for the cows when he cut them.
Oh.
Hold on. And I'm telling you, that put me on fire. Remember it like it was yesterday.
I bet. Well, you got another one, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. You got two, so hopefully things have worked out for you.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, up here.
Hey, guys, I shot.
Hey, guys, I shot an 8-pointer with my bow back up north. Wasn't a good hit. I tracked the deer for about 500 yards in a circle back up towards the house where I was hunting. That joker lay down right in their dirt driveway, and it wasn't dead. I got about 30 yards away from it and noticed a school bus coming down the street, so I figured I'd grab that joker by the horns and just drag him off the road. And as soon as he grabbed the deer's antlers, he just shook his head and
threw me across his body.
Pretty much flung me across his body in the air. The deer was about dead, and he kicked my badonkadonk.
Yeah.
Be careful on that. If a deer's eyes is closed, he ain't dead.
That's why you go up here with an arrow and you poke him in the eye.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah,
okay?
Make sure.
Talking about the deer that they're keeping as a so-called pet, Dr. Deer or Dr. Hyde, that is what you get with a pet deer. Either way, not good. Also, a texter loved the bear hunting story, and we did not ask him if he put another second round into the bear.
Actually, the story, what he said, and you can read this if you go to carolinasportsman.com. Where Brian Cope wrote this up. He was using a 7mm mag on the bear, which that's good.
That's a lot of guns.
That's loaded for bear.
That's loaded
as they
for
say.
Bear.
And said, yeah, he hit it the first time, and it ran a short distance, and then he finished it off with the second shot. So congratulations to Jeff. And
man,
yeah,
500 pound bear. You just, if getting 500 pounds of dead carcass,
yeah,
in that terrain, man, I'm gonna tell you, whew, amazing. It's a job. It's amazing they got him out.
Well, the trying to get a little slime into the show today. Pulled up the DNR fishing report, which they piggyback off of anglersheadquarters.com. I would highly encourage you to go there because Jay does a good job. He keeps up with a lot of stuff. And, you know, that's a never-ending task, keeping up with fishing reports. You get a good one, and then the next week, you know, things aren't so good. And it, that's just a task to keep up with that. And so the fishing report starting out in the Piedmont area for Lake Russell. They said the water level is around 473, which is just below full pond. Water temperature's in the mid to upper 70s, and water clarity is still pretty good. They got a quote from guy Jerry Codal. He said that until now, the bass fishing on Lake Russell has only been about fair, and that's probably because it's been warm. And he said the water temperatures are still a little bit higher than they should be. But it's starting to come around now. You want to look for fish around brush piles in 25 to 30 feet of water. And what they really want to eat is live herring. Who doesn't? And they'll take soft plastics, fished on a drop shot, which I'd rather be beat with a stick. But Jerry expects in the next couple of weeks that the fall bite should be wide open. If you're moving down to Clark's Hill, water level is, again, about 3.5 feet below full pool. Bass fishing, kind of the same as Russell. It's not great, and again, once it starts getting later on in the day, bass fishing's picking up. Cloudy days, you get a pretty decent fluke bite. You can also, grind out throwing some crankbaits or a gunfish 115 around humps in 5 to 6 feet of water. Our buddy William Sasser said that, and I know I've been following William on Facebook,
yeah,
and he said that the hybrid and striper fishing has been on fire on Clark's Hill. And before the storm, they were doing better, and he said it's starting to recover now after the storm. And they're also starting to see some schooling activity with the striped bass. Let's see, let's click down here to, oh, my future home lake. Lake Greenwood. It said water levels are 439. Full pool is 440, so it's pretty high there. Bass fishing on Greenwood is not strong, but again, you can catch some fish flipping around docks in the shallow water. And same thing, as the water temperatures start to drop, the bass fishing should pick up there. Looking at Monticello, which is typically a catfish lake. I always think of Monticello as a catfish lake. Reports of bites also getting better. Fish can be caught off long points in about 60 feet of water. Still anchoring, fishing big pieces of cut shad. Let's jump over here to, let's see, the Santee Cooper system. If you're going down that way, bass have gotten into a pretty good fall pattern. That's according to Captain Brett Mitchell. There's a lot of schooling going on around balls of shad, and they've not really moved back in the creeks, but they're still on the main lake. Crappie fishing, according to Captain Steve English, down there on Clark's Hill, that they've caught some good numbers of fish on the lower lake, but they're also catching a lot of nice bluegill. And this Santee's strange. They got a really good big bluegill bite. Basically, fishing in the brush piles.
Right.
I did that years ago, did a story about it for Carolina Sportsman. And basically, it's about the same thing as crappie fishing, you know, just taking a jig pole or something.
Sure.
But using a cricket,
sure,
instead of a minnow. And those brim will pile into those brush piles. Jump up into the mountain areas. Our buddy Sam Jones has basically said fishing's poor. I know he's been having a troll still in 100, 110 feet of water and picking up a trout every now and then, but said, you know, like everybody else, as soon as the cooler water gets here, it's going to get better. And finally, Lake Hartwell, Chip Hamilton, who was mentioned, guide extraordinaire, taxidermist, he said that the fall pattern for stripers and hybrids is kicking in. And pretty much you can just pick the area of the lake that you want to fish. And there's still a lot of stripers in the big water, but they're starting to move back up the Seneca and Tugaloo Rivers. They do kind of a they're not doing their spawning run like they do in the spring, but they'll move back. They're trying to get in that shallow water. What they're doing is they're following bait fish.
Sure they are.
So you got shad in Lake Harwell. You got the herring, which is kind of why they're everywhere. And Captain Bill Plumley basically says the same thing. He's finding fish over humps, mid-lake, or even on the lower end. And so everything, soon as the weather, and we've been getting some, you know, with this cooler weather this weekend, fishing should really pick up. But I tell you what, woods are on fire.
It's hot.
And the other thing, I won't go into detail because we're going to run out of time, but, man, the saltwater fishing.
I was going to ask
down
you.
Down on the coast.
It's hot.
Because we dodged.
It's hot.
They dodged a lot of that stuff. They're catching a lot of big bull reds about anywhere you go.
Yep.
And
in 11-day span at Apache Pier at Myrtle Beach, they put 29 king mackerel on the pier. That's impressive for a pier fishing, Philip. I know it doesn't impress 29, you.
29 king mackerel.
In 11 days.
Yeah.
That's.
Why wouldn't they throw them back? Because they ain't no good to eat.
That's awesome pier fishing right there. I don't care where you're at.
I don't care
East
what you
Coast,
say.
Gulf Coast, that's on fire.
Yep. So I actually got one of our reporters for Sportsman, Captain Teach Corley. He's up in North Carolina, and I don't know whether he's writing for Sportsman or something. He said he was at work, but he was up there at Avalon Pier, maybe?
I've heard, yes.
Avalon Pier.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were catching numbers, but they were catching
big
sizes of king mackerel.
Smokers.
So, if that's your thing.
Smokers, man.
That's what you need
to
do.
Ain't nothing better than that reel going, hi.
You looking for me? I'll be in the woods.
I know you will, brother.
All right. Well, let's go to our break, and then when we come back, we will wrap up today's show with our calendar of events and today's parting shot.
Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Stay tuned. Wrap this thing up.
Wrap it up. I'll take it. Well, it's calendar of events time here on Upstate Outdoors. Mr. Springer, what you got for us?
Well, we're going to start right up the road. The next few days and into next week is going to be exciting at the Cabela's. If you have kids and they need somewhere to go trick-or-treating, which is always cool. So starting,
is that where they're going to have that deer carcass up
no,
there?
No, no, no. I'm getting to that.
Oh,
you're
okay.
Getting ahead of yourself there, wild man. Okay? You're on a roll, I believe. I'm going to tell you. Starting on the 29th, which is Monday, and then Tuesday the 30th, and also Wednesday the 31st, they got free Halloween events at Cabela's where the kids can kind of either, if they want to dress them up, what you need to do is put on a camouflage hat and go in there and go, woo, and hey, what are you dressed up? I'm dressed up as Springer, okay?
a camouflage hat and a natural light and a pack of cigarettes.
Don't do that.
I'm Tommy Springer.
Yeah, anyway, and there's going to be a lot of, in all seriousness, there's going to be a lot of free crafts for the kids and whatnot. And then coming up, what I thought was really interesting, on the 11th of November, they're going to have a field to fork. Okay, I mean on the 3rd of November, November the 3rd, Field to Fork, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Cabela's. Give you everything you need to know to do with your fresh kill, and they're actually going to have a deer carcass at Cabela's, the way I understand it, as of now, okay?
They're going to bring a deer carcass in there.
A deer carcass, and they're going to, you know, dehydration, how to seal it, you know, vacuum seal and all that good stuff. So
basically, they're going to run out early. They're going to run out early in the morning on 85,
pick up
some roadkill.
Hey, that might not be a bad idea.
That's a tough thing to schedule.
You
got to have one in the freezer or hanging in the
freezer.
I'm just
telling you what the information is, sir.
Awesome.
I leave it in JD's hands.
Maybe they'll have it on Halloween, and you just go by there and they'll cut you a piece off.
Trick or treat.
Trick or treat. Give me some of that back strap. Don't be stingy.
Coming up on the 6th of November, we got a free youth deer clinic at the Belfast WMA, and that's on Tuesday, 8:45 a.m. to 2 p.m., parents are encouraged to join in with their youth ages 10 to 17 to learn about cooking, game care, preparation, marksmanship, and tree stand safety. And for more information about the clinic and or application, please contact Mariana at masonmm at dnr.sc.gov. Okay, and that is on the DNR website, I think. And our old buddy Tom Mundy's going to be also at Cabela's on November 10th and 11th. The man, Mr. Fish Stalker himself, that's going to be 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. will be question and answers after the seminar. They're going to break for lunch, and 1 to 2 p.m. seminar and 2 to 3 question and answers. And then 3 to 4 p.m. Fishing section, hang out and have a good time with our buddy Tom Mundy. Also coming up in later on in December, it's the Tower Shoot Pheasant Hunt at the Clinton House Plantation. Make a difference for a child at Christmas. And they got a couple of different ways you can pay and get in, be a part of this. And the morning shoots at 9:30 a.m. to 12. Afternoon shoots 1 p.m. to 3. And if you're wanting some more information, you can contact our buddy Oscar McCurry at 864-225-8704. Or contact him at email at mccurryoutboards@bellsouth.net. I got it!
Close enough. There's an S in here somewhere.
Okay, that's your calendar of events. You were looking for me, wasn't you?
There was, and I was looking while you were reading all that. The Hunters for the Hungry are having a banquet on November the 3rd. That's at Philadelphia Baptist Church right down there at Pauline.
Okay.
If one of you guys that listens to the show that's involved with the Hunters for the Hungry, text us. We got a few minutes before the end of the show, because I saw it passing by, and I'm going from memory. I think it's November the 3rd, which is next weekend, so we wouldn't be able to call it out. It's probably Saturday night or Friday night. But
I would think.
If any of you know about that, how about text us on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 71307, because we always like to give you a shout-out. And I don't remember who the featured speaker is,
right,
but they usually have their benefit there at Philadelphia Baptist Church in Pauline this time of year. And
anybody needing wanting to send some information like that, please go to our Facebook page and leave that for me and Philip, and we'll be glad to pass it on.
And in the meantime, well, calling an audible and putting Bigfoot on the shelf. I found this story while I was in the deer stand last night. I didn't have a whole lot of time, but I did find it before then. It's a story from the state newspaper about face-eating squirrels ravaged jack-o'-lanterns in a Columbia neighborhood. This was written by Sarah Ellis for the state. Dateline, Columbia, South Carolina. It was a dark and stormy night. No, wait. It was a perfectly average night in Columbia's Rosewood neighborhood. The jack-o'-lanterns were left by the porch steps with care in hopes that Halloween would soon be there, but terror, with fluffy little tails and sharp little teeth, was working. Do you know it's for us? On Monday evening, John Cadega and his family carved their annual Halloween pumpkin, triangle eyes and nose, jagged smile, just your typical jack-o'-lantern. Then they set it outside overnight, and come morning, the pumpkin remained untouched. But by afternoon of the next day, the stuff of nightmares, Cadega said. They've gnawed off the face, he said, and it gets more and more grotesque by the day. Rosewood's serial Halloween bandits have struck again, as they have for years, and they've never been stopped. The culprits, a band of face-eating, menacing, hey, but kind of cute, to be honest, squirrels. They're zombie squirrels, said Tim Bettis, whose innocent jack-o'-lantern succumbed to the terror in less than 24 hours. We've made a joke about it, how it probably wouldn't even make it to Halloween. Last year, every kid that came to the house kept telling us that our pumpkin was melting. All across Rosewood, which is one of downtown Columbia's signature neighborhoods, face-eating squirrels have wreaked havoc on Halloween pumpkins. It's been going on for years, said Glenn Matthews, who owns Columbia's Modern Exterminating Company and lives in the nearby Shandon neighborhood, which is a haven to countless squirrels. They don't get arrested for it either. Can you believe it? But in all seriousness, it's no surprise that jack-o'-lanterns fall such easy victims to squirrels, Matthew said. They don't know it's your pumpkin, and they don't know that you're trying to make a statement. All they know is basically you're putting out some food.
Food, man.
And we're going to eat it. In the neighborhood Facebook page, some Rosewood residents have suggested possible remedies, rubbing cayenne pepper on the pumpkins or some hot sauce. And Springer's got one. He says, man, you
it's
can sit
Daisy
back there.
Daisy air rifle, 177 caliber pellets.
Yeah, that's right. You just sit back there and pick them off.
Bingo.
And it says, perhaps, though, the squirrels are just getting into the Halloween spirit as much as anybody else, as the face of the poor jack-o'-lantern has been picked away little by little. Cadega said he can kind of appreciate it on some level. The original intent of those things is to be scary. And apparently the squirrels do a lot better job of making a grotesque more than the than he could. But anyway, hey, want to thank our guest on the show today, B.C. George, and also for his deer track, and also Jeff K. with the bear hunting story. That's the end of the show. Springer, take us home.
God bless. Talk to you next week. We enjoy being here every week. Get outside. It's good for your soul. Talk to you later. Yeah.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.